the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from the USA Today NFL Wire. And with me, as is almost always the case, is my co-host Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from SB Nation, their family of sites, and also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. Seth, it is our mock draft show. We've got lots of things. Obviously, we've got the NFL draft this week. What does that mean for you and your show after this week?
Well, it means when you record your mock draft on a Sunday night that it's no good by Monday morning. But outside of that, I mean, it's not bad. We had a ton of information this year that we were able to get out. We had a lot of rankings. We had a lot of information that we were able to gather from other people, which always makes things, you know, a little more enjoyable. And quite frankly, you know, we just had a lot of fun, and that's kind of what the whole thing's about. And it's interesting to talk about the draft and kind of go through everything and enjoy, you know, the speculation. And now, like you said, we get down to it. And I will say, like, from our perspective, you know, your and my perspective, it's really different when the Cardinals pick outside of the top 12 or 13, because the names are lengthy. All of a sudden, we have to start to learn and understand and maybe even start to try to convince the fans about, right?
Yeah, that is the one thing that you have to really watch for with this late. And I was getting into conversations on Twitter with a number of fans today, and they're like, oh, this is the plan. I'm like, if there's one thing that you have to know with when you're picking in the 20s is that it's going to be. Absolutely not. There's no way that you're going to be like, this is the way it's going to be. It's impossible because you've got 22 teams in front of you. You've got, and you can't go in targeting a player. You either have to have someone that you love that you have to be willing to go up for, or you've got to have a bunch of guys that you're like, I like these guys, because otherwise, how in the world are you going to end up? You're just going to end up being disappointed, or you're going to end up without a good draft plan because of that. And so that's what we want to show. This is episode 354. It's mainly our mock draft show, but what we want to talk about first are the prospects that we want and we think fit. So this is not about, so combination of what we've heard, what we know about the team. Now part of this, Seth does talk to people. In terms of the information I get, it's usually from people who talk to people. But since I've been covering the team now for the last 12 years, and now we've got, you know, nearly a decade. This will be the 10th draft for Steve Kai. There's some trends, and we kind of know the profile of the type of players they like. We knew that Zaven Collins was a Cardinals type player. We knew that Hassan Reddick was there when they drafted Robert Kindici. We knew that that was a hope for the Cardinals at least.
That was a Hail Mary. It just didn't work out.
But it worked out. He was a player that we both coveted, and we knew that the Cardinals would have liked and fit. Kyler Murray was another story. And then Isaiah Simmons, we knew that they were targeting a couple of defensive players, whether it was Derek Brown, Isaiah Simmons. And so we know our way around what the Cardinals look at and kind of the habits and the things that Steve Keim likes. And so we'll talk about who we like, who we are okay with. And I wrote about this on Monday for CardsWire. I put them into tiers and then after that, we'll go into the actual mock draft where we give our picks for each team. I didn't attempt any trades this year because the trades were already kind of crazy. But I wrote on Monday, kind of like, I usually keep myself out of the writing, like out of first person. But this is one of those cases where they say these are how I rank the tiers. And so I said, I went through and went through, these guys they're not happening because they're too good. They're locks for the top 10. There's the redundant players who, you know, they play positions where the Cardinals clearly shouldn't be or don't need to draft. I've got my cross my fingers, one of them falls. Then the guys I like that I'd be completely comfortable with the Cardinals drafting. And then the ones where I'm like, well, these guys would be fine. And that's how I look at them. So for me, I don't even really want to talk about the redundant or the guys that are completely out of our league, so to say. But here are the players that I cross my fingers on. It would be love if these guys fell. The first one would be Alabama receiver Jameson Williams, followed by LSU cornerback Derek Stingley, Georgia Tech defensive tackle Jordan Davis, Florida State pass rusher Jermaine Johnson, and USC receiver Drake London. And at least on two of those, on JMO and Stingley, there is perhaps the slight possibility of falling because of injuries. But the rest of those, these are the five pipe dream players for me.
Yeah, and just real quick, Jordan Davis is Georgia, not Georgia Tech. But
I'm sorry, Georgia. I don't even know what I was saying.
Just does know that, I promise.
It almost came out of saying Georgia tackle, defensive tackle. Georgia defensive tackle, Jordan Davis.
And you know, you look at it, Stingley's an interesting one because I believe it was Chris Sims that mocked him to the Arizona Cardinals. And then today, for those degenerates out there like myself, in that would dare bet money on the NFL draft, Derek Stingley became the favorite to be picked third overall. Like, that's how wild this offseason is and this draft season. And that's how much, as you know, Ron Wolfley would say, subterfuge is out there right now. Like,
it's crazy.
Literally, the first pick is unknown. Now, the favorite all of a sudden is Trevon Walker, but that didn't happen until Monday of this week. So that's how crazy it went. And when I joked earlier that, you know, we did our mock draft for the original Draft Breakdown podcast on Sunday night, Justin and I both mocked, you know, Aiden Hutchinson, and that doesn't look like it's going to be right now. Like, that's just how much stuff is changing, how much stuff is up in the air. And you're right, man. Like, you look at it, Stingley, Drake London, Jordan Davis, those guys are Jameson Williams. Those guys are perfect fits. But when you're drafting 23, you don't typically get the perfect guy.
No.
We talked about it on our podcast, and everybody wants these like high end comps. Like, everybody wants these like all pro comps. And the reality is that most of these guys aren't going to reach all pro status. They're just not. You're hoping that they're multi-time Pro Bowl players. And if they reach it to that level, then they are, you know, they're home runs.
Right.
You talk about JMO or Jameson Williams. You know, we've talked about it. He's a taller version of DeSean Jackson. And people go, well, that's, you know, that's not a high enough comp. DeSean Jackson was a four-time Pro Bowl receiver.
He was a scary. He was a bad, bad man on offense for a while.
That's literally still causing havoc on defenses in the NFL today. 15 seasons in the NFL. If you get a first-round draft pick that makes five Pro Bowls and ends up being in the NFL for 15 seasons, that's a great pick.
The Cardinals fans are so spoiled because they expect every first round receiver to be Larry Fitzgerald. Larry Fitzgerald's a Hall of Famer. You're not going to get Larry Fitzgerald.
And the craziest thing about Fitz is, and to take nothing away from him, he was an all pro one time in his career.
Exactly. Like, he went to a gazillion Pro Bowls, but he was rarely the best receiver of the season.
And so it's incredible. You talk about Derek Stingley. You're talking about a legitimate, you know, tier one corner in the NFL. Those don't fall, you know, those don't grow on trees. We know that here in Arizona.
Yeah, he's like the Patrick Peterson of 2011 when Peterson went fifth overall to the Cardinals. He's that type of talent. Right. He didn't play as well over the longer period of time like Peterson, but the talent-wise, when he was a freshman, he was as good as, and he might have been one of the best players in the entire country as a freshman.
Right. People were talking about Deion Sanders level talent when he was a freshman. You know, Jordan Davis. And we'll talk about Jordan Davis a little more as we get into our mock. But Jordan Davis is, you know, I tweeted about it today. And this is, you know, not a spoiler or anything. But the reality is anybody the Cardinals pick at 23 is likely not a starter. But there's one guy in this draft that you could pencil in as a starter from day one, and that's Jordan Davis. He would be their starting nose tackle from day one. And that's not a shot at Rashard Lawrence or Lucky Fotu.
He's just that good.
That's just, yeah, the type of guy he is. You know, so you look at those guys, Drake London, you know, we talked about Drake a lot. There's word, and we're going to talk about tonight, that he might end up being the first receiver drafted in this class. You're talking about a guy that his high end, you could be talking about, you know, another Mike Evans type. You know, we talked about it. He's probably on that T. Higgins spectrum, and people might go, well, that's not good enough. You know, that's a 1,100-yard receiver in year two. Like, those, again, you know, everybody wants Jamar Chase. Well, there's not a Jamar Chase in this class. But if you get a guy that's going to give you 1,100 yards in year two, like, that's a phenomenal pick. So you just look at it, you know, there, like you said, there are guys that are pipe dreams. And those are those guys. And there's a reason they would fit perfectly with Arizona, because basically they would fit perfectly with every team, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I, if there's a pass rusher, an edge rusher that I would, you know, aside from the locks at the top, Jermaine Johnson to me is that guy. Had the production, has the size, the athleticism, and then on top in the production, once he left Georgia, now he was one of those guys, like, he's a Trayvon Walker who didn't have big numbers, but then he goes to a different program where he gets to be featured, and he exploded. And then you see the performance that he had at the Senior Bowl, which, you know, we will say this, you know, a lot of teams, and the Cardinals are one of them, if you have any doubts about them, and then they fall out at the Senior Bowl, that carries a lot of weight, because now you're not just going against all types of college players. You're going against future NFL college players, so the best of the best. And he absolutely dominated. I still think he's kind of a pipe dream, because especially since... He could, we've heard whisper, I know on your show, like, what, could he go second or third overall in some scenarios?
Yeah, we're hearing right now that he's one of the guys that the Jets are talking about. So it's incredible to see the disparity. And that, you know, I tweeted about it today. Jermaine Johnson is honestly the most interesting case, because there are people that say he could go fourth overall, and there are, and like, intelligent people that are pretty dialed in say he can go fourth overall, and other people say he could fall into the 20s or past the Cardinals. Like,
that's insane.
People don't, and that's what I'm saying about this draft more than any I can remember in recent memory, and mostly because there's no quarterbacks. Typically, when there's a quarterback, a dominant quarterback or two, you're able to slot those guys at the top, and then everybody kind of falls in the pecking order. This year, there's really not. There's not the consensus pass rusher. There's not a consensus tackle. There's not a consensus corner. And there's really not a consensus wide receiver. So you're talking about literally all the premium positions. Nobody knows. And that's how you're getting guys emerging like a Zion Johnson, who now all of a sudden is being mocked in the top, you know, 16, 17. Like, this was a guy coming into the draft season that most people had as a day two pick, a very solid day two pick. And now all of a sudden he's being mocked to like the Chargers at 17. Like, that's what's happening this draft, because there's a, no superstars. There's not a Myles Garrett. There's not a, you know, a lockdown corner. There's not a Jamar Chase. There's none of those guys. And then, of course, the quarterback situation where I don't even know if there's one with a first round grade by most people. So it's just going to be really interesting to follow along on Thursday.
In terms of the players that I like, that I think are going to be reasonably, probably there will be one of these players on the board for the Cardinals. I like these guys. These are not the pipe dreams. These are the guy I would rather one of the pipe dream players, but these are players that I like. And I would be very pleased if the Cardinals landed one of them. That'd be Ohio State's Chris Olave, one of the wide receivers, Purdue's George Karloftis, Penn State. And this is after listening to Seth, I like more and more Penn State's pass rusher Arnold Ebiketie, Zion Johnson, the lineman out of Boston College, Devontae Wyatt. There's some possible concerns there, but based on production, the type of player, his athleticism, he feels like a Steve Keim player. Florida cornerback Kyir Elam and Penn State Jahan Dotson. I think all of those I would be pleased with any of those players at number 23. And then I've got the players I'm like, yeah, sure, why not? Like, I don't hate them, but I don't love them either because of fit or because I don't think their ceilings is high, or I'd rather them if they traded back. That'd be Treylon Burks out of Arkansas, Trent McDuffie, Washington cornerback. He's an interesting case because, you know, Daniel Jeremiah loves him. He's like a player. He doesn't wow you with his testing. But there's nothing wrong with his testing. But when you see him play, he's just really good. He said he's one of the, he calls him a fairway pick, one of those picks that you can't go wrong with. There's the Iowa center Tyler Linderbaum, and then Georgia's George Pickens. There's some concerns about that, but those I'd be okay with on those picks, but not necessarily at 23.
Yeah, and you look at it, you know, like you talked about McDuffie. I think people really get revved up about his physicality. They really like how, because you don't see that from a lot of corners, right? You don't see a guy that competes in that manner from a cornerback position a whole lot. So I think people get really, really excited about how physical of a player he is. And they're like, oh, man, this is a different cat, you know? And then you say, like, hey, what do you think of his coverage skills? And he's like, you know, he's got some work to do. And it's like, well, in the NFL, that's what I am concerned with. Like, it's great if your corner's a physical guy and likes to play physical, but like at the same time, like, you want a guy that can cover like a glove, right? And so that's the big thing. You know, when you look at those names that you put down, it's interesting because you can poke holes in any of them, but that's why they're not top 10 picks, right?
Like, exactly. Not, that's pretty guys. Much everyone after and, your locks for the top.
And so you just look at it and you're hoping that that you pick the right guy in that situation. You know, go back a couple of years, you look at it like Justin Jefferson, right? You know, I don't know how many people thought Justin Jefferson would be the best receiver from that draft, but he sure as hell has turned out to be. So when you look at it from that perspective, that's what you have to really, you know, pay attention to. Yes, it gets tougher as you get down into that, into the 20s, you know, it becomes, the disparity becomes greater. You know, do you end up with Jalen Reagor or do you end up with Justin Jefferson? And those are things you have to be able to answer. But at the same time, you've got some choices and you've got some options. And so that's kind of what is going to be nice as we go through that tonight.
And with that, let's wrap up this segment of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. And let's start up with our mock draft. So coming next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, to preserve Cardinals talk on the web, we'll come back and we'll begin with our mock drafts. We'll start with the first 8 picks. We'll kind of break it up over the next, you know, break it out down into 4 spots. And then we'll kind of go from there. That's coming next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the Star of Cardinals talk on the web. And now for, I don't remember if we did a mock draft. I'm pretty sure we didn't do one in 2013. Cause that was, I had barely started the show back in January. And I don't think even Seth, you were on at that point. So I think this will be our 9th. I think our first one started in 2014 and the Deion Buchanan draft. And I know that we've done one every year since then. At least for the Cardinals, we've had a pretty good idea of the type of player that they like. And it's going to be interesting when we get to the Cardinals pick, because I have a feeling that fan-wise, I think fans will love your pick and hate my pick. Not because, now, this is not what we think they should do. Now we're trying to predict how things play out. So let's start up at the top of the draft. We've got the Jaguars picking number one for the second year in a row. As you talked about on your show, taking an offensive lineman, because there was, you know, Ike Ekwonu or Evan Neal was a guy pegged at the top of some drafts. But with the investment that Jacksonville's already made in their offensive line, it just doesn't make sense for them to draft one first overall. And so they're kind of pegged into the pass rusher, the best players there. And up until, you know, like yesterday or the day before, Monday or Tuesday, Sunday, Monday, or even today, recording on a Tuesday night, there was a report from someone, I can't remember who it was, but said, oh, Jacksonville's going to be a surprise. I thought, I'm going to go with the safe pick, the one that we pretty much thought the whole time, and that's going to be Aiden Hutchinson out of Michigan, who's, if anything, he's a ground rule double of a pick, because you know he's going to be good. It's just a matter of how great he becomes.
Right.
But that wouldn't be a surprise, right?
No, that would be, you know, we talked about it on our show, on the Original Draft Breakdown podcast. His like floor is Kyle Vandenbosch. And so, yeah, you're probably not going to be like super pumped up that you pick Kyle Vandenbosch with the
first
overall
pick. But that's if he does the worst that we think he's going to do.
Right. And so that's if he stays healthy, he, you know, all of that good stuff. And that's not a bad pick at all, man. Like, that's actually a really good pick. But like you said, at number one, you kind of want something that's a little sexier.
And which brings us to, we both have the same pick going first overall. We have the Jaguars going with Georgia stud Trayvon Walker, a guy who, very interestingly, was just even before the combine, was mocked into the 20s. He was seen in mock drafts of the first landing of the Cardinals, and now he's probably, we think, going to be the first pick in the draft. How does that happen for a guy that didn't have great production in college?
I mean, a lot of it is you're taking some stuff away, in the sense of he played in a very demanding defense, in the sense that he was expected to do his job, and that's all he was expected to do. He was expected to make sure that he held, you know, his ground, that he was able to contain and force guys and allow the dynamic linebackers, N'Kobe Dean and Quay Walker, to make the plays. And he did it with huge success. And you talked a little bit about it earlier, right? Jermaine Johnson was the guy that came in and rushed the passer. Like, that's crazy to think about. And now he's being talked about and the favorite in the betting circles to be the number one overall pick in the 2022 NFL draft. From a size testing, all of that standpoint, and we won't go too heavy into this, he is what he is.
He's big,
fast. Like, he is without a doubt the prototype. He's the guy that everybody looks at and looks up to. And, you know, like you said, pre-combine late February, and my buddy Kyle Posey from Niners Nation texted this to me on Sunday or on Monday when everything changed. Trayvon Walker was mocked at 45.
Oh, my gosh.
To the Baltimore Ravens as late as pre-combine. And now he's the odds-on favorite to be the number one pick. He's going to end up being a litmus test about college production and if a guy can come in and become a dynamic playmaker despite not having done it at the college level.
Yeah. Yeah. So we both agree on the first pick. We actually both agree on the second pick. So number two overall, the Lions, this actually works out perfectly. I don't know if you could line it up any better for them. If Trayvon Walker goes first overall, that means they get their own guy, a Michigan man, in Aiden Hutchinson. Aiden Hutchinson goes second overall in both of our mock drafts. He's a hard nose. He's a Michigan guy. Dan Campbell would love him. He was a perfect fit in their defense. He does what they want them to do. I mean, I'm sure Dan Campbell would be thrilled with Trayvon Walker, but then you get the added effect that he's had the production in college. He went to Michigan. He's already got a fan base. Just think in terms of this. This is like when the Cardinals got Jake Plummer and Pat Tillman. He already had, it's kind of like the Jake Plummer pick, because Jake Plummer already had fame. And then he just carries that over to the Cardinals. Only add this to it. Hutchinson was also grew up in Michigan, played high school ball in Michigan, then goes to Michigan for college, and then gets drafted by the Lions. That's a home run. I don't think you go wrong with that pick. I think Lions fans would love it. I think he's a great fit, and I think he'll have a very nice career there if he stays healthy.
Yeah, and like you said, it's the perfect Dan Campbell pick. It's the perfect Lions pick. The only question is going to be, is he there? I mean, if he's there, he's the pick. If, you know, obviously if he's not, they're split, it sounds like, on Trayvon Walker versus Kayvon Thibodeau. I think Walker wins out in that case, but like we said, in our mock, it's Hutch, and I don't really see it gonna go right, a different way.
Right. And if Hutch goes first overall, which is what I had initially before I changed it after I heard that report, I had Walker going to the Lions because mainly because of the size difference between him and Thibodeau.
Yeah, and I think that's accurate. We talked about it a little last night, and I told you the wrong thing before. Brad Holmes likes Thibodeau. Everybody else loves Walker.
There we go.
In the building. So that's what the report from Jeff Risden, who
covers, I think, Lions Wire for my network.
Yeah, yeah, so Lions Wire and Real GM. That's what he talked about the other day, is that that's kind of where they're at. So again, we go Walker, Hutch. I don't think if Walker goes one, I'm willing to bet that Hutch goes two.
Absolutely. And this is where our mocks begin to be different. With the third overall pick to the Houston Texans, you have them going two different directions. And I believe this was a change that came not long before our show. Is that correct?
Yeah, so again, the betting market has just completely gone on its head, man. And so one of the things that Justin and I talked about on Sunday, and Justin mocked this on Sunday, and now all of a sudden it's the favorite. So, you know, we're not tastemakers. We just kind of follow the trends. And the favorite to be picked third overall right now is Derek Stingley Jr. We talked about him before. That's a guy that before, you know, this season was looked at in the eyes of guys like Patrick Peterson. Like, that's how high he was thought of as a prospect. And then he, quite frankly, didn't work that hard. That's, you know, it is what it is. And then he bowed out with a Liz Franck injury and kind of capped his career that way. He came back. He's not even 100%, and his testing numbers were through the roof. This dude's a freak of nature, man. Like, if you go back to when he was a freshman covering Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson in practices, he was literally a lockdown corner. I think he's probably has a chance to be the best player in the draft. That's how good he can be.
And I have the Texans going with protecting their quarterback, which as of right now is Davis Mills, and they get Ikiakwanu, the very intriguing tackle out of NC State. Ikwanu and Evan Neal and Charles Cross, all three of those guys are more so Ekwonu and Neil are kind of who's going to go first. But I think they're going to go with the protection, especially if they like Mills but don't believe he's a playmaker on his own. They need guys around him. You got to protect him. And so Ekwonu is that pick for me at number three. Number four, we go to the Jets, the first of two picks that they've got right now, unless the trade that is rumored to happen. So they've got pick number four and they've got pick number 10. Number 10 could be heading to San Francisco with the Deebo Samuels deal. That will happen perhaps later. We'll find out. But with the fourth pick, and I see with Robert Saleh there, I see them trying to build a defense that he can dominate with, since he was so good leading that San Francisco Demons defense. And so you look at two main needs. One is off the edge, and one is at corner. And because the top of the corner class isn't as well, there aren't as many great, potentially great players as there are with the pass rush, I have them going with the corner to start, and it's not Stingley, it's Cincinnati's Sauce Gardner. And so they pick up their cover guy first, and it depends on how they're going to do it. In San Francisco, they kind of built their defense from the pass rush out, and they got defensive backs that perhaps on other teams or statistically you wouldn't think are great. But we know that cover corners are at a premium, and in a division where you've got Stephon Diggs and now you've got the Dolphins loading up as well, you've got Tyreek Hill, they need someone to cover. And so I've got them taking Sauce Gardner. He's the first corner off the board on mine.
Yeah, and I stayed on the defensive side as well. I just went with Kayvon Thibodeau. If you believe Thibodeau is going to fall, I highly recommend, and we're not sponsored by them, so I don't know if we'll get in trouble, but I highly recommend that you go to like BetMGM or one of the sites. His over-under is 4.5. If you don't think Thibodeau goes to the Jets at 4, you can make some money on that. I think they go Thibodeau. I think they get the pass rusher that they desperately need. Like you said, though, they need to fix that defense. They had the 28th in scoring defense, and then they were 32nd in scoring offense. So they're awful on both sides of the ball. They can go either way, but I don't think they can take a wide receiver at 4. And then you look at it, Mekhi Becton, they just took 2 years ago, or was it 3 years ago? It was the Isaiah Simmons draft, right?
So, yes, yeah. This is 2020.
Yeah, so 2 years ago, they took Becton over all pro Tristan Wirfs. Never forget that. and so, you know, you look at it, they desperately need him to work out. Maybe it's a fool's errand not to cut bait and find another tackle here. But they have the 10th pick, so maybe if it worked out for them. That takes us to the other New Jersey, New York team. And we both go a different way here at the same position.
Correct. So the Giants are going for another offensive lineman after they took Andrew Thomas a couple of years ago. They're still looking to protect Daniel Jones. They still believe in Daniel Jones. They just don't believe they've given him the right team around him to be successful.
Well, I mean, it's bad when you're already looking to move on from a wide receiver that you drafted in the first round last year.
But I have them going with, so I've already got Ekwonu off the board. And so I have the Giants going with Alabama's Evan Neal, while Seth has the first offensive line coming off the board Charles Cross.
Yeah, and so again, this is one of those late movements that has come across. Cross is the number one, or he's the favorite to go at 5 now. So over Ekwonu, over Neal. Apparently, they've been tied to him for a while, and it's just getting public. It's going to be interesting, man, because if he goes at number 5, that's going to set off a chain of reactions that I don't think that everybody's ready for.
Probably that's where all this trades. I didn't even attempt to project any trades, because one, there are already a lot of trades that happened.
Well, especially if, like you talked about a second ago, and we'll talk about it in a second, but if the Jets trade number 10 to San Francisco, like that's the movement in the top 10 alone is going to be unheard of.
Right. It's crazy. We go to the 6th overall pick with the Panthers. I've got them going with the quarterback. I've got them going with Malik Willis. I know they got Sam Darnold, but why would you go with Sam Darnold again? The quarterback position is interesting to me because I mocked Willis and Kenny Pickett as the two quarterbacks. And I feel, especially with Matt Corral attending the draft, I think he knows he's going to go in the first round. I didn't put Corral in the first round. I didn't know where to put him.
It's tough, man. I'm with you 100%.
But I think this is the nice fit. You've got the Panthers with Willis. He's definitely the quarterback with the best upside. If we're thinking, if you're looking at the past quarterbacks, he's not the Mac Jones. He's more the Trey Lance, and the 49ers were willing to bet the future on him. And so I think they pull the trigger on Willis. I don't know, but I think that's a nice fit. It'll give them that quarterback with a upside, and it gives them a little bit of hope. And you know, maybe it buys Matt Rhule a little bit of time with that job that he's doing there.
Yeah, it'll be interesting if they bet their final seasons on Willis. The only reason I don't have them going quarterback is Josh Norris of Fantasy Underdogs, who's fairly dialed in, is basically betting that they're not taking quarterback. So I went back and forth on which offensive lineman to go here. I went with Evan Neal. I honestly, this is a pick I cannot figure out. I have no idea. The betting favorite right now, I believe, is Kenny Pickett. So if you want to go from that direction, Pickett's the favorite.
And ew, right?
I know. And if you're feeling froggy, Ekwonu's plus 700, Neal's plus 600, Willis is plus 600. So yeah, Pickett's at plus 250, and then Charles Cross is at plus 340. So there's got to be something that somebody knows about Charles Cross. Like, somebody likes him a lot.
Yeah, yeah. And we move on to the next pick, the 7th. So we get the Giants picking again. And now, since they got the protection, I have them going with the pass rusher. Perhaps they go corner here, especially if they're trying to move on from James Bradbury. But here, I'm having them go off the edge. And Kayvon Thibodeau, who went 4th overall for Seth, goes 7th overall for me.
And I went with Sauce because Stingley's off the board. So if you take Sauce 3 or 4, the Giants are probably going to take Stingley. I've heard from Giants people that offensive line and corner at 5 and 7 is what they're looking to accomplish. And so if that happens, you know, Cross and Sauce, that's a, you know, whether or not you agree with the picks, they've accomplished what they were looking to do.
And wrapping it up for this segment was the Falcons. And we both have the Falcons going wide receiver, and you have them taking Drake London, a USC guy that we both really like, think is a great fit for the Cardinals. And I've got the wild card here. I feel convinced that Jameson Williams is going to go top 10. Now, maybe this is a little rich, but if you look at the history, and honestly, it's not a pick that the Falcons should make, probably, but big-time receivers from Alabama, they've got a history of it between Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley. And so I think it's a perfect fit. And this year kind of looks like a yuck year anyway. So if you get the guy that looks like he could be the absolute star of it, so Drake London, if he comps out, if he ends up with ceiling of Mike Evans, that's great. Mike Evans isn't a star, though. J-Mo has the star potential of being that best receiver in the NFL.
He's got some Tyreek Hill to him.
And so I've got him going to the Falcons. Sadly, some of my friends around the Cardinals are sad that he's going that high because they want JMO to the Cardinals. I keep telling him. I told him, it's like, you're going to get A.J. Green and you're going to like it. And guess what they've gotten? They've got A.J. Green, so you're going to have to like it. That doesn't mean they're not going to get a receiver, but it's definitely not going to be JMO. So JMO goes number 8 overall. And for you, he goes London. Is this a case where they want more production early?
This is a case where it just sounds like teams really are buying into London. And I think Williams falls slightly down just with the likelihood that he's not going to be a huge factor at the first half of his year one. I don't think this is a bad pick from your perspective. I think it actually makes a lot of sense. I'm just gonna play a hunch that the Falcons go London here. If the Jets don't make a trade, if they do not acquire Deebo Samuel for the 10th pick, there is a rumor that they will try to go in front of the Falcons for London. So we'll see if all of that kind of comes to fruition.
Interesting. So coming up next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best part of Cardinals talk, we will do the next 8 picks. So we'll go from number 9 to number 16 overall, starting with the Seattle Seahawks. That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. They're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast. The star of Cardinals talk on the web. The Seahawks, after their trading of Russell Wilson to the Denver Broncos, they now have the 9th overall pick. And the funny thing is, we both have them going with the tackle. The funny thing about that is the fact, isn't that what they wanted? Wasn't this just what Russell Wilson wanted them to do the entire time?
Yeah, it's crazy.
And they're going to go get a tackle now. And I have them getting Charles Cross, and you have them getting Ekwonu, which makes sense. Dwayne Brown he left, right? He's not. They did not re-sign him.
That's a fair question. I don't know for sure.
I'm pretty sure he is out. And so, but it just feels kind of funny to me that they traded away Russell Wilson after he was unhappy because he ran for his life because they didn't have a good offensive line, and now they're going to get an offensive lineman for Drew Locke or Geno Smith, whatever. I don't know.
Well, I heard that didn't the NFL deny his contract?
No, it was fixed the next day. They did disapprove the contract. It was something minor, and then it was approved the next. The signing went through the next day. It was very funny how that happened because there was the report of Geno Smith's contract. Then I saw on the transaction report that it was disapproved, which I'd literally never seen before. Right, and then the next day, it was all better the next day. I'm sure it had to do with some weird language to something. They probably messed something up in the verbiage.
Yeah, so you've got, you know, like you said, so Dwayne Brown is not currently on the Seahawks roster. And it sounds like the Panthers are going after him, which could, you know, mean that maybe Jess is right? Maybe you go get a veteran tackle to block for your new rookie quarterback. But yeah, so, you know, they ran Russ out of town by not ever getting him help on the offensive line. And now they do it for the new guy. Then we come back to the Jets. So let me ask you this. If the Jets truly do go through with the trading, which is being whispered as, you know, could happen. So Deebo Samuel to the Jets. The only thing we know right now is the 10th overall pick. So that's all we know as of this moment. If that happens, based on your mock so far, where would you go with this pick?
For the 49ers?
Would you take a wide receiver to replace I mean, obviously you can't replace Deebo, but like, would you take a wide receiver or do you think that they just take?
I think they'd have to.
So, I mean,
if you look at it, wouldn't they have to? Because now they took away, they're going to go with Trey Lance this year. And they're going to take away their best offensive weapon. I like Brandon Ayuk, but Brandon Ayuk was not the difference maker. You have to give him a difference maker, right?
Yeah, and so I mean, in both our cases, I would say Garrett Wilson probably makes the most sense if the 49ers make that trade. Because
I think London works there as well for me, because he offers,
he's a different type of guy than Brandon Ayuk. I don't, let me say this, because he's still on the board for me. I don't think they could take Jameson Williams.
No.
Because I don't think you can potentially not have him. Even if he starts on the pup, that's what, 3 games or something like that?
6 weeks. It's 6 weeks.
Six games. Can you really trade Debo and not get your rookie for 6 weeks?
Like, no.
That's crazy. So, but that's not happening right now. The Jets, for me, I have them taking Garrett Wilson here. You know, this is they like we talked about earlier, the worst offense scoring offense in the NFL, the fourth worst scoring defense in the NFL. You honestly can't make a mistake depending on if you give them a playmaker on offense or defense. Like, you just literally cannot make a mistake here.
Right. And the Wilson pick works either way. Honestly, the Wilson pick works for the 49ers. It works for the Jets. I have the Jets going. This is another Robert Saleh pick. And since they addressed the cornerback position with the fourth pick and got Sauce Gardner, I have them going pass rusher. And they get Jermaine Johnson, a guy I covet for the Cardinals. He's my favorite, you know, of the possibly pipe dream guys. He's my favorite pass rusher. But he goes 10th overall to the Jets for me, which means they have... they rebuild that defense for Saleh, giving him, you know, a top pass rusher and a top cover guy, which should, you know, maybe not in year one, but in year one, they should see dividends from both those picks early on, right?
Right. So let me ask you this. If you had to look back, and obviously, you know, we try not to put picks at the, you know, at 10 versus 4. But if you had to look back and you could take Thibodeau and then Stingley, who's still on the board in yours, would you rather have Thibodeau and Stingley or Sauce and Jermaine?
I think that the type of, well, personally, I like Sauce a little bit better. I think Stingley,
you just like the size and the length.
I do, and that Stingley comes with slightly more risk with the injury that he's coming off of. And well, in the drop off in play, like just the production dropped after his freshman year. And I think for Saleh in particular, I think he would rather the consistency of Sauce.
Awesome. Awesome. So that takes us to the Washington Commanders. I'm glad you remembered their name, because I just call them the football team now. And
I can't wait till someone starts calling them the Commies, and the irony of that being in the nation's capital.
and we both have them taking
Ohio State receiver Garrett Wilson for me, who came off the board a pick before for you, and you have them going with Chris Olave, one of the guys that, you know, many Cardinals fans would like to see, but he goes super high at 11. So both Ohio State guys off the board. What's fun about that in both cases is that they both join Terry McLaurin, another former Ohio State guy.
Yeah, and so that's the thing. You look at it, Olave, here's the thing to me, and Olave is, this is where his, I think his over-under is 11 and a half, or maybe it's 12 and a half. Anyways, which means, no, so they pick 11. So yeah, 11 and a half, sorry. Our chart has 12 because we're on an Excel spreadsheet, my bad. and so, you know, you look at it, Olave to me is really similar to Terry McLaurin. He's not quite as physical coming back to the ball, but like, he is the same type of, you know, kind of finesse wide receiver. So it'd be interesting if really they are in on him. I don't think it's a bad thing at all. It'll just be interesting how they utilize him. You know, he's got some Will Fuller to him, so that'll be interesting. Like you said, he'd be a perfect fit opposite DeAndre Hopkins, similar to what Will Fuller was.
And Daniel Jeremiah said that Chris Olave is a perfect fit for pretty much any team. Because of his skill set, he's a fit everywhere.
Well, and it's funny, you look at his reception perception from Matt Harmon of Yahoo, and so Matt grades every route that they run, and every one of them but one is green, meaning like he's really good at it, and the only bad one's yellow, which means he's average at it. And every other receiver in this class has like three or four reds, and Olave's is all green. So yeah, that dude's just different. Vikings, we both have them going cornerback.
Correct. And they badly need this. But
because the Cardinals have their last first round cornerback now.
Yes, they do. For me, I have them going with Stingley. I have him coming off his own. You've already got two corners off the board, so it can't be Stingley. Stingley's already off the board for you, who went third overall. But I've got the Vikings going with Stingley, giving them an LSU young pup to pair with the LSU old guy in Patrick Peterson, while you have Washington's Trent McDuffie, a player who's very interesting in terms of how he's viewed across the board. Daniel Jeremiah loves Trent McDuffie, thinks he's a fairway pick, and we know that the Cardinals really like McDuffie. We also know they really like Washington defensive backs. That's kind of their thing.
Right.
And so interesting that he goes top 12 for you.
Yeah, I'm not a huge McDuffie guy. I've talked about it before. I think he's a good player. I think you talked about redundant. I think he's a little redundant in that sense. However, the Vikings are desperate for a corner. They need help. They need youth. And here's the thing. McDuffie's going to be kind of the anti-Patrick Peterson. He plays at a physical rate. He is a guy that works through the ball, and he's a guy that is going to try and really play physical in coverage as well. So that'll be, you know, something to watch for him right there.
Then we move on to the next one, the next pick overall, which is number 13, where we have the Houston Texans. We actually, for the next two picks, we come back together. So we were lockstep for picks number one and number two. And once again, we come back together for picks 13 and 14. We have them taking Notre Dame safety Kyle Hamilton, a guy that some think is a top five player in the draft, but he's a playmaker. And as Seth and his family can attest more to watching Hamilton, being in part a Notre Dame family in some ways. What do you like about Hamilton in their match with the Texans?
You know, it's interesting because Lovie Smith's in charge there. So, you know, early we gave him Stingley and you gave him Ekwonu. And so now they come back and they get a guy that can kind of be the captain of that defense in Kyle Hamilton. He's a guy that is closer to like an Adrian Wilson type. And you know, that's for me his high-end comparison. That would be obviously a borderline Hall of Fame level player. And so when you look at that, that's, you know, high praise. You know, on the low end, you're going to get a guy like Taylor Mays, and that's the concern. Is he a guy that just isn't quite athletic enough to play safety, and is he physical enough to be kind of a box guy? That's what the question comes down to. Can he be similar to like a Justin Simmons, you know, Adrian Wilson, those type of big physical safeties, or is he just not athletic enough? I don't think he has any athletic problems. I think he'll be fine, but those are the questions he has. And then we have the ultimate Ravens pick, right?
Yes.
They just sit there and let the draft come to them.
And then they end up with the best player in Jordan Davis, and then we're sad.
And Justin and I joked about it. 100%, if the Ravens draft Jordan Davis, they're going to unlock that pass rush that's been missing. And you're going to see a guy that gets 7-8 sacks a season from the interior that plays at this high level, that's a borderline all-pro all the time. I said before, you know, he's bigger than him, but he could be the next Haloti Ngata. Ngata was with the Ravens for a long, long time, won a Super Bowl with them, five-time Pro Bowler, two-time All-Pro with them. This dude was a freak of nature coming out of Oregon. I see a similar type of guy. He's going to come in and just be a special player. And of course, the Ravens always just seem to be able to sit and draft these type of guys.
Yes. And we move on to the Eagles, the 15th. They've got two picks coming up. And their first one is the 15th overall pick. We both have them going with a receiver. Different receivers. I have them going with Drake London. I think he makes a very good match for what they're looking for Jalen Hurts. They've already got Devontae Smith, so he's your burner down the field. So you give him Drake London, which is the big body on the other side of the field, while you have them going with JMO, with Jameson Williams, which, you know, both of them are home run picks to me. But I already had JMO off the board, but I think we kind of locked in the Eagles going with receiver at 15th overall.
Yeah, and here's an interesting question. We've heard Steve Keim even talk about it, that they'd be willing to move up 4 to 5 spots. Is the 15th pick, which is about 8 spots, is that too far?
That's because that's going to be tough because of what the cost will end up being.
Right. And so you're probably looking at, you're probably either looking at this year and next year's 3, or you're looking at next year's 2 second round pick. But if London or JMO are there in either scenario, the question becomes, would you go and do it?
I would be willing to do that, if especially for the possibility of one of those two guys. Now the question is, even though the Eagles have another pick, would they trade out of that pick knowing that they've got one of those receivers on the board?
Right, exactly. So it'll be interesting to look at. But if those guys are around at 15, it feels like it's a little too far, because again, you're talking about probably this year's 3rd and next year's 3rd, or next year's 2nd and maybe like a 4th. Like, it's a lot. So you're going to have to, it'll be interesting to go, because you usually don't make that type of move for a non quarterback. So,
right.
So it'll be interesting. And we finished this one up with the New Orleans Saints. And I tell you what, man, this is another interesting one, because they desperately need a quarterback. But they also desperately need a left tackle after losing their all pro left tackle, whose name's now escaping me.
Teron Armstead.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting to see how this goes, and what they'll do, because with the lack of attention of quarterbacks in this class, doesn't it feel like they could potentially pick the tackle they want, which is probably going to be a thinner, have already thinned out more than forcing the quarterback pick here?
It would make sense, especially. Well, in your case, there's 3 quarterbacks left on the board, so it depends on what they think about those other quarterbacks. For me, Willis is already off the board. You look at what they're doing. So you've got Jameis back in town. You give him a receiver, especially when they had the issue. For me, I've got them going with the tackle when they pick again at 19. But I actually have them going with the receiver. It's to give Jameis a weapon to, you know, especially when, who knows what's going to happen with Michael Thomas this coming season, because that was interesting last year. He just never got better. And now you give him the playmaker in Treylon Burks. And, well, I think he's a really good fit because of the fact that he's got size, but he is gadgety enough, and I think Sean Payton will be able to do some really nice things with him in the passing game.
Yeah, and I have them going with Trevor Penning, because I think, as you'll see in a second, this thins out really quick at the tackle position.
Absolutely. Coming up next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, we move on to the next set of 8, which will take us through pick number 24, which means the Cardinals pick is coming up. So that's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. You're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We have the 17th pick overall with the Chargers, which that could be kind of the top end of where the Cardinals, if they want to trade up for someone, that would be the place where they could go. That said, I don't have any trades happening in mind because they kind of already have happened. And I have the Chargers going up with a big guy, a guy that the Cardinals I could see selecting. And I have them taking Georgia defensive tackle Devontae Wyatt, the other guy who, if it weren't for the monster that Jordan Davis is, Wyatt would be getting so much more attention, I believe. I know there are a couple of concerns that come with him. He's a year older, which is less than ideal, but it is the position where you can afford to have a guy that comes out a year older. And there was an arrest a while back, wasn't there? Are there still concerns beyond that?
So, I mean, the biggest thing I've heard is that there's three additional law enforcement run-ins that are being looked into. So that's the big thing. When you look at Devontae Wyatt, outside of age, so if you take away anything off the field, which is tough, you know, to do, but from just a scouting perspective, when you take away the age, when you look at everything else, he profiles really, really closely to guys that have been picked really high.
Quinnen Williams, Derrick Brown.
Yeah, Quinnen Williams. He's not quite as big as Derrick Brown, but like a Daron Payne, who went, I think, like 16-ish. So you're talking about guys that have been first-round picks. Corey Leggett was picked in the first round by...
Chargers, wasn't it?
The Chargers, yes, thank you. So, like, that's how he profiles athletically and production-wise. The only question is going to be, obviously, the age at 24, but then, you know, people are really going to have to dig into those off-the-field concerns. I have them going with a 25-year-old, so obviously age is not a concern for them, right? Bernard Raymond, the Austrian-born tackle from Central Michigan, they desperately need help at right tackle. Athletic freak, man, 6'6 and an 8, 303 pounds. But this dude was in the 89th percentile for his 40, the 80th percentile for his vert, the 98th for his broad, 86th for his three cone, 91st for his short shuttle. Like, this dude's a freak of movement skills. Profiles similar to like an Eric Fisher coming out, obviously not as good on the film, or we'd be talking about him top 10. There are concerns, though, because he is 25. So people look at it one of two ways. You either look at this as a positive, that he is 25 and only been playing, I think it's like 4 or 5 years, or you look at it as he's 25 and he's already reached his athletic peak and he's not going to get any better. You know, like I said, high end, it's Eric Fisher. Low end, you've got a bunch of guys that have crashed and burned. The biggest one, Jason Spriggs out of Indiana. It's a pick I'm glad the Cardinals don't have to make.
And then we come back around to the Eagles.
And yeah, second pick for the Eagles.
And we both have them going at that linebacker. Thank you for taking him off the board so the Cardinals don't consider him. Devin Lloyd out of Utah, and which is it's definitely a need pick, and it makes you think whether the Eagles should have ever left Jordan Hicks leave in the first place when he signed with the Cardinals a few years ago, because they've been looking for a guy who could fill that role.
Yeah, and this dude is, you know, a really good athlete. Again, a little bit on the older side. That's the concern with him. But when you look at it, explosive athlete, leader of the defense, long arms. You know, the Eagles, the craziest thing is the Eagles haven't drafted a first round linebacker in like 30 years. So it's going to be interesting to see if they break that finally. And then this is the pick that is going to be really interesting, because you've got the Saints back on the board at 19. And you don't have them going quarterback. I do.
And I've got them, I have them taken pending, which you had them going with the 16th earlier. Pick.
Yeah. So, and I have them going with the first quarterback of the first round, Malik Willis. You know, I think Jess and I are both on the board that he's going to be the first quarterback taken. I think it fits what they need. And like you said, they've got Jameis for a year, so they don't have to play him right away. I think that's the idea behind this.
Then we move on to the 20th pick with the Steelers, and they do need a quarterback. Unless you believe in Mitch Trubisky, which no one should believe in Mitch Trubisky right. at this point to be like a legit starter who's going to take them to the playoffs. He can start games, sure. And so I have them going quarterback, and they land their hometown guy with Pitts, Kenny Pickett, and he doesn't have necessarily the upside, but I think he kind of fits kind of a Steelers mold, does he not? In terms of he's definitely not Ben Roethlisberger, but in terms of what they like in their quarterbacks, he'd be a nice fit there. And it would be Jake Plummer in Arizona, and so he's already got a fan base, and they're already going to support him, even if he doesn't succeed necessarily right off the bat.
Yeah, and he's built similar to like a Joe Burrow coming out, and then you see him test athletically, and he's actually a very good athlete, which is something that they've talked about. I've said before, man, like the toughest thing for me is his play kind of reminds me of Blake Bortles. I was a big Bortles fan when he was coming out, but he ended up, he threw 35 touchdowns in a season. So that, it wasn't all bad, but at the same time, his kind of boom or bust ability made it tough. That's what I see with Pickett. Same type of guy. He's a better athlete than Bortles, a little smaller. But, if you can get him locked in and you can get him on the Derek Carr range, I think you're all right. I know it's crazy, but those baby hands are concerning. That's crazy to me, dude. Eight and a half inch hands is literally. Well,
and then you saw it in the Senior Bowl practices that it was an issue.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be an issue, and you're talking about Pittsburgh where weather is an issue. So, it'll be interesting to see what they do. They got Mitch Trubisky, the tragic loss of Dwayne Haskins. Maybe that puts quarterback more on the board or not. It depends on who you talk to. But it's going to be a tough pick. That takes us to 21 and the New England Patriots. And we have them going
You didn't give us your pick for the Steelers.
I went with Devontae Wyatt. So I'm going to ignore the noise of the off-field stuff, and I'm going to give the Steelers a guy that can potentially replace Cameron Hayward. We talk about the Ravens sitting there and getting guys. I think this is similar for the Steelers in this case.
If the
off-the-field stuff clears.
And then with the Pats, who picked 21st overall, for me, they end up getting a guy that would be on the Cardinals' radar. And we kind of pegged this months ago when they traded Shaq Mason away and said, oh, they're drafting Zion. So I have them taking Boston College guard Zion Johnson, which just to have him slide right in and take over for Shaq Mason.
Yeah, and that's a great fit. That's a great pick. I like that a lot. He's ending up going to be interior offensive lineman number one. Tyler Linderbaum ended up weighing in better, so I think he's going to still go in the first round, but it's definitely interesting how that juxtaposition has changed for both Kenyon Green and Tyler Linderbaum. I have them going with Lewis Cine, the safety out of Georgia. This is just such a Bill Belichick pick. You're talking about a highly productive guy, a guy that was a captain leading the best defense in the last decade in college football. He's a guy that makes a lot of sense. He profiles similarly to some safeties that have come out lately that have been really good. Sheldrick Redwine, who's with, I believe, the Browns. Javon Holland, who's been good for the Dolphins, I believe it is. You've got guys that he profiles similarly to. I don't think people realize how big he is at 6'2 and 200 pounds. Like, he's a big dude. And then he ran a 4.37 40 and had an insane 133 inch broad jump. This is a special athlete. I think he's going to be a guy that's on the Patriots radar, and that's going to get you two safeties in the first round.
And Sine is actually, what makes him interesting is that he's one of those sleeper picks that lots of people didn't have, but could sneak into the back end of the first round, because the talent at the back end of the first round, it's really kind of even with the front of the second round. And so he's a guy that could, like, I saw Tom Pelissero said there are some teams that don't have, who have first round grades on fewer than 15 players. Now the Cardinals have first round grades on 26 or 27 is what Steve Keim said. Well, many teams are at about 20 and some are less than 15. And so it's really interesting if we're going to see movement in the back of the first round because of those teams, unless those teams are guys who pick high in the draft and it won't matter, but and to see if there's any trading out of those picks because they don't view them as first round talents.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting because, you know, this is a draft where you just have a lot of teams that probably are going to look to bail out, Cardinals included, if one of their top guys isn't there, because you can add day two or three picks, and this draft is fairly deep. But yeah, I mean, it makes sense that Keim would come out and say they have 26 or 27 first round grades when they're picking 23rd, right?
It does make sense. It does make sense.
Because then you don't have to lie about the grade you had on the kid you drafted.
That is true. For Cardinals fans, they will be very sad at this pick for the Packers at number 22. I have them going with the receiver. So now that they've signed Aaron Rodgers to $1 gazillion and then traded away his best player, they're going to draft a receiver, right? But you don't have them drafting a receiver. But I have them taking Chris Olave, which will make Cardinals fans very sad, because I think, I don't know if it's just Twitter, but I'm guessing that if I had to guess, as I said, that if I'm guessing and I have to guess, yes, that was completely redundant, that fans want the Cardinals to draft a receiver. And Olave is a pick that they would all really, really like. The problem is the Packers take him away. But why don't you have the Packers going with the receiver in this case? Now, that's in part because the top five receivers are off the board for you, are they not?
Yeah, so the top five receivers are off the board, and they pick again at 28. And just based on what I've heard is that they've got their eye on another receiver that, you know, we talked about a little bit at the beginning that could be on the Cardinals' radar as well. But I think he'll be available at that 28th pick when they pick. I have them going George Karloftis, so some Cardinals fans will be disappointed about that as well. But Karloftis fits in that to replace not Preston Smith, but Za'Darius Smith. Similar athletic profile, size, athleticism. They already have Rashawn Gary, and they're pretty good at making sure that they have guys in place most of the time. Obviously not at wide receiver, but I don't think they expected to have to trade Davante Adams this year.
This brings us to the Cardinals pick, which for me, they have five receivers off the board. They have the Zion Johnson's off the board. You have two guys that you've got Karloftis, which is the pass rusher. And mind you, both Seth and I really like, there are questions with his production, but I feel that Karloftis is kind of a no fail pick in my mind, because he's got the size, he has the athleticism, and he has the motor. And as a pass rusher, if you have the size, athleticism, and effort, I don't think there's a way for you to be bad. That, I mean, you're going to be a solid player. However, I have, even with Karloftis on the board, because Trent McDuffie is on the board, I told you guys, Cardinals fans will not like this pick. I would guess, if given between the two, that I think they like McDuffie more and would make him the pick over Karloftis. Although, as Seth was talking to me before the show, is in this, the way this pick, the way this scenario falls for the Cardinals, that they probably or might rather go with Penn State's Jahan Dotson, who we both have going a little bit later. However, I would be absolutely giddy if the Cardinals can land the guy that you have in your pick for the Cardinals.
Yeah, so I, again, this is the guy. I have no idea where to spot him. He could go fourth overall to the Jets. I don't think he falls past 23. I told my buddy Jeff Risden that when he was mocking the other day. And I have them going with edge rusher Jermaine Johnson. So it's crazy to look at this, but there are really big splits within the community. And by the community, I mean the drafting community on Johnson. There's a couple knocks. We talked about age with some other players. He's an older guy. We talked about one-year production. We've talked about that before. When you look at production, you want a kind of that linear growth, right? You want to see guys improving year to year. The reality was, and the reason I'm not hugely mad about Jermaine Johnson's production is because he played at Georgia. Now, he was a pass rusher at Georgia. So I get the idea behind that you would expect a little more from the guy that's coming in for a Trevon Walker to rush the passer in that sense. But he did put up 5 sacks last year in 7 games. Not terrible. This year in 12 games, 11.5 sacks, 18 tackles for loss. Again, a guy that produced well. If you read, you know, different, depending on you know, who you follow and what you think, you have different takes on his ability against the run. The places that you look at, if you trust them, is, you know, Pro Football Focus, I guess they just go by PFF now, right? And you look at it, he's a guy that did a really nice job setting the edge. So he's good against the run. We know the Cardinals struggled against the run. And then you look at it, he's a guy that did a nice job rushing the passer. So if he comes in and is able to be that true edge player, you've got, you know, a really nice fit for the Cardinals. We talked about this. I tweeted about this. I still don't see him as an every down starter in year one. I think he'll be a guy that rotates in. Maybe by the end of the season, he can take over for Devon Kennard. But I assume that they're expecting Kennard and Golden to be the starters this season, even if they are able to bring in a Karloftis or a Johnson.
Yeah, I would say that, especially for base downs, because Kennard is pretty stout against the run. And right. And when you're talking about a young player having to learn the ins and outs of Vance Joseph's defense, if you bring him for passing downs, you say, hey, go get the quarterback. Perfect.
Right. And so you look at it, his high-end comparison, which would be, you know, obviously completely the best-case scenario would be like Robert Quinn, a guy that ended up, you know, I think he was an all-pro one time, but ended up being a very good player in the NFL. You know, there are some lower end guys on the other side, and one of them, and this is an old guy, I don't even know if you'll remember him, but John Engelberger, that played for the San Francisco 49ers.
I don't.
For a while he played 9 years in San Francisco, just never ended up producing high levels of sacks like was expected. He capped out around 6 sacks, you know, in a season. But he was a good starter for them for, you know, what you look at for about 6 seasons. So it's not that he was awful by any means. He just never reached that potential. That's what you look at with a guy like Johnson. He has questions. He's not a lock. He's not a guy that you're going to be like, oh, my gosh, we got the next, you know, Myles Garrett. But he is a guy that could end up being, you know, like I said, like a Robert Quinn type of pass rushing, you know, guy that ends up giving you, you know, I don't want to say he'll get 19 sacks in a season because that's an absurd amount, but he could give you 3 or 4 or 5 seasons where he's at that 8 to 12 sack range.
We move on to the last pick of this segment, which is the Dallas Cowboys. Since Karloftis is on the board, I have them going that direction, going with the guy that rushed the passer, while you have them rebuilding that offensive line with Iowa's Tyler Linderbaum, who is believed to be a potentially great center, right?
Yeah, so they're looking at Linderbaum as replacing, I believe it's the kid that was in Wisconsin before. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. He was drafted a couple seasons ago.
Baez?
Tyler Baez. And so, you know, Linderbaum's able to step in and kind of replace him right away. I don't think Karloftis is a bad pick there either, by the way.
All right, coming up next on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk, and we'll come back and wrap up the draft with the final 8 picks. Now we don't have to worry about the Cardinals. That's coming next on Rise of C-Red. We're back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We bring up number 25 is the Buffalo Bills. There is a sneaky possibility that they could bring in this running back, probably not going to go in the first round, but if someone does, the Bills at number 25 with Breece Hall is a possibility. I don't have them going that direction. I have them going with a cornerback. They go with Andrew Booth, the guy at Clemson, who is coming out, coming off injury, but he's got length. And again, in that division, you're going to need guys to cover. It's just a matter of whether it turns out to be a good pick, but they could use that. They're fine on offense. But they could use some help on defense after, you know, they couldn't stop the Chiefs at all.
No, they couldn't stop the Chiefs. I do have them going with Breece Hall. I'm the one I think they're the ones that end up going with a quarterback, or sorry, with a running back here. Shocking. But I think Hall's the pick to kind of finish off that offense. I have concerns about Booth just with he just came off a sports hernia, or as they call it, a core body injury or surgery. And so I've heard that he hasn't passed his physical yet. So that's a concern. You could see him fall out of the first round. He's been nicked up his entire time at Clemson. So that's always a concern for me. That takes us to the Titans, and we're back on the same page.
Yes, where we go with Tulsa tackle, who have some upside potentially as a guard, Tyler Smith. The Titans need protection on that offensive line, and they get it with a guy with some upside. We'll see how he does in year one, you know, after watching Zaven Collins out of Tulsa kind of struggle. It'll be interesting to see how Smith does on the protection side of things.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is they need help at right tackle. They need help at right guard, or one of the guards. I'm not sure which one off the top of my head, but they need help there.
Left guard, because of Southland.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. So, you know, they can use Smith at either of those positions. I went with Smith over the guy I have going to the Bucks because he does offer that flexibility, whereas Zion Johnson, who I have going to the Bucks at 27, is a guard only. So he measured and tested and plays similar to Ali Marpet. So why not replace Ali Marpet with a guy that's similar to him?
And for me, though, Zion is off the board. And so the Bucks, they go with the pass rusher, and they bring in a guy that I would be pleased with the Cardinals with getting, and Arnold Ebiketie, very length. Like, he doesn't have the height, but long arms, very athletic. He's an athletic freak, another athletic freak coming out of Penn State. So the Bucks will keep, you know, especially now with Todd Bowles at the helm. He loves him. He loves pass rushers. And so he can just add another one to his tool chest in Ebiketie.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see where Ebiketie goes, because he's a guy that actually could be in play at 23 for the Arizona Cardinals. So if Johnson's off the board there, and they do really want to address the pass rushing situation, Ebiketie is a name to watch.
At number 28 with the Packers for their second pick, you have them going with a receiver. I have them going at corner, taking the other Washington cornerback in Kyler Gordon. The Packers, for some reason, don't seem to have a problem with getting high-end play from their cornerbacks, as we saw as Rasul Douglas couldn't get off the Cardinals practice squad and ends up being, you know, one of the Packers' heroes all season. And maybe they don't need it. They've got Jaire Alexander. They've got Rasul Douglas. But you can never have too many corners. And Kyler Gordon gives them another option. We know that Washington defensive backs come ready to play in the NFL. And so I have them building that defense as well, especially since the pass rushers, you're probably looking at the end of, like, there aren't any first round pass rushers left on the board here.
Yeah, it's tough as you get lower here. That's why I have them taking Carl Loftus there, because I think that they come back and take George Pickens. Pickens gives the Packers a similar type of 50-50 ball threat to Davante Adams. He's not as dynamic or diverse in his route running at this time, but he can be a guy. You know, I talked a little bit earlier about Drake London with T. Higgins. Pickens is a guy that can be like T. Higgins. Pickens' high-end ceiling is like an A.J. Green type of clone. So, you know, a big body jump ball receiver that is able to out-physical and out-maneuver guys in the air. And we know that Aaron Rodgers loves those guys.
And we go on to the Chiefs, who have the 29th and 30th picks. We both come back with this on the same page, as they had take Jahan Dotson out of Penn State for the 29th pick, a guy that seems to be gaining some steam in terms of interest in the Cardinals. But out now, with no Tyreek Hill, they do need someone who can win on the outside, and Dotson could be that guy. Only we have them going two different ways on defense with the 30th pick. You have them going with Ebiketie as a pass rusher, and I have them taking Florida cornerback Kyir Elam, a guy that I also would love definitely not mind the Cardinals picking at 23. You know, having that Florida connection with Marco Wilson and Kyir Elam. Elam, who's a freak athlete, very long, and I think it'd be hard for Steve Keim to pass up, except for I think they really, 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 really like Trent McDuffie overall. But if you look at what the Chiefs need, you need to replace Tyreek Hill. Now, Dotson's not a Tyreek Hill replacement per se, but he can win from the outside. He's the top six receivers. He's the one who has played the highest rate of snaps on the perimeter. And so there are some perhaps questions about his size and frame to be able to win on the outside, especially against physical cornerbacks. But the dude can win it at any level. He's legitimately fast. He's quick. He can make plays. He is not afraid to go up and get the ball. And so Dotson, we would both not mind. Dotson is a guy I've come around to because I didn't know much about him. But as his name came up, he does kind of fit the Cardinals. And if it fits the Cardinals, it'll definitely fit the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes. But what was your... I went Elam in part because there were no first-round pass rushers, but you go with Ebiketie instead.
Yeah, and Elam's not a bad pick because they desperately need corner help as well. So that makes sense. I just went with Ebiketie because he's still on the board. He's one of the best players left, and they desperately need to get rid of Frank Clark's contract in the next year or two.
That's true. With the 31st pick, you go with the Bengals. You have them going with Elam. And I have them going with, they've been building that offensive line this offseason, I have them going with Linderbaum, who then could be the young center to kind of pair with Joe Burrow to be kind of like Peyton Manning's Jeff Saturday. It can be Joe Burrow and Tyler Linderbaum.
Yeah, I love that pick. I went with Elam just because I think that they need help at corner unless Eli Apple turns back into a pumpkin. So, you know, you've just got a tough one there. Linderbaum makes sense, though. Like you said, they've been throwing substantial money at the offensive line. They need it. They desperately need that help.
Carson Palmer wishes they had done that, you know,
yeah,
15 years ago.
And that gives us our final pick in this year's mock. And we both stayed on the defensive side of the ball for the Detroit Lions. So where did you go?
I have them going with a second Michigan star in safety Dax Hill, who really can do a lot of things. I think Dan Campbell will love doing things with Hill because he can play safety. He can play nickel. He's super versatile. Think of that. He's not Tyrann Mathieu per se, but he has some of the versatility that Mathieu had when he played here for the Cardinals. So I think, you know, this is a tricky spot because, you know, you could see the Lions go quarterback here to give them that extra fifth year. You could see Matt Corral sneak into the conversation here or a team trading up. But it kind of works out nicely in terms of popularity because, for me, the Lions end up getting both the pass rusher out of Michigan in Aiden Hutchinson and now at Dax Hill, who was a playmaking defensive back for them.
Yeah, and I have them going with N'Kobe Dean. So we're on the same page. We just went different ways with it. You know, this is a situation where they just need help on the defense. Their defense in 2021, outside of playing the Cardinals really well, they allowed 27.5 points per game. That was 31st out of 32 teams in the NFL. So one of the worst defenses,
when they played the Cardinals.
Yeah, one of the worst defenses in the NFL. They desperately need to shore that up. You talk about Aiden Hutchinson, and then you go get kind of the field general in N'Kobe Dean. That's a good way to, you know, change the tide.
And they've been desperate for good linebacker play for a while.
They have. And real quick, Jeff Risden, again, in his Real GM or on Lions Wire, I'm not sure which side I read it on, to be completely fair, wrote that inside the building, you have to remember, you've got Brad Holmes, who is the assistant GM or whatever his title was when he was in LA with the Rams, and Jared Goff. There is still belief in Goff in that building. Whether or not there should be, that's not the conversation. There is some belief in Goff, who, you know, 3,200 yards, 19 touchdowns, only 8 interceptions, over 67% completion percentage. It's not like he was awful for them outside
nope,
of
he was he not
could, outside of he can't win football games. But that being said, there is still a belief, so I am kind of with you. I don't think that they go quarterback with that pick, even though that's a very popular one.
And with that, that takes us to the end of the first round. Hopefully you're listening to this before the draft, but if you're listening to it after a draft, you can have a good laugh, because I'm sure we will be way off, because it's really hard to pick. It's really hard to nail picks in the draft. So we'll next week, when we come back on the show, we will review the draft. We'll talk about, we'll talk about how we did with our mocks, but we'll take a look at the Cardinals draft class, because we will know who those players are, and we can review those. So that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. We'll be back again next week. Thanks for listening, as always. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms, so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.